The one thing I did get, though, was a lot of love. Mom gave me a lot of love, gave our siblings a lot of love.
Sure.
And the other thing that really helped out is she'd pray over me every morning, every night. So at a very young age, I began to believe that God was with me, that I was blessed. And that was huge for me because, you know, I think if you're ever going to take on some big dreams, you're going to take on some God-sized challenges, and self-sufficiency is no longer an option at that point. And I believe it's in, at that point that you better believe in a higher power to give you that little confidence that you need when you're going after these big goals. Because when you're going after big goals, you're going to get a lot of resistance, a lot of darkness that you have to go through.
Hey, JB here. The wolf is in the wolf's den. I have an awesome guest today, kindred spirit, so to speak, in the sense this guy is a salesperson who's built a huge organization of salespeople. We believe in a lot of the same principles. So I think it's going to be really helpful for everyone here to watch me engage in a conversation with someone that really understands the world of sales and entrepreneurial success, has a great backstory, all right? So it's going to be massive value here on the actual learning side, and there's also an interesting story here and a bit of a celebrity twist as well. That's the back. Ready? Edwin Ariave. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. How
we
are
also
you?
Have a lot of common friends we know, right? Together here. So, okay, let's go right into this here. You have a very large company that does essentially home alarm systems, right?
Yeah, smart home security.
Smart home security, okay? And it's one of the largest in the nation that does it?
It's the largest. If you Brinks Home Security,
sure.
We're their number one dealer in the U.S.
Great.
Yeah. We're across 36 states.
So let's start here from the beginning here, because your backstory is great. Right before I said stop. We were having a conversation. I said stop talking, because what you were saying was really interesting. You said you moved here from Colombia when you were 6 years old.
Yes.
I assume you didn't speak a word of English when you got here.
I did not.
Okay, and you got raided by whatever?
Yeah, so I was born in Colombia, came here when I was six, and unfortunately, 2 weeks after coming to the U.S., our home gets raided by law enforcement for suspicion of drug trafficking.
DEA, was it?
DEA, FBI, one of those. And
you never really want a three-letter agency knocking at your door, right?
I was six, so I thought we were getting robbed.
Okay.
And both of my parents ended up in jail that day. My sister and I ended up in a foster home.
Oh, wow.
About 8 months later, our parents get acquitted of our charges.
Okay.
We are now reunited with them. We're thinking this nightmare is over. However, for the next 4 years, our home would get raided at least once a year. And then finally on that fourth year, our home gets raided one last time. And this time, they were able to put away my dad for a very long time.
So this is what year is this now?
This is, I came in 85.
Okay, so is this like the area of Pablo Escobar and that? Or either Cali or, what was next year, Cali or is it Medellin?
I think it was during the Pablo days.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, this is immediately my interest. Everyone's like, he's a folk hero or menace, depending on who you ask. But I do a lot of business in Colombia, so I know some people love him there, a lot of people hate him, but either way, it's an interesting character for sure, right?
He was an interesting character
So ultimately your dad did get in some...
So he got in trouble. They put him away for a while. And then his last words to me were the cops were nice enough to allow me to talk to him. And he just says to me, son, you need to become the man of the house. You need to take care of this home. And my dad was my hero. So I took those words to heart and I promised him that I would.
Mm-hmm.
We had two additional siblings now and dad did leave us some money. However, about 3 years later, we started to run out of that money.
Find some money, enough to pay the mortgage.
He left us a couple hundred grand.
Okay, fine.
Days, I think it was 100 grand.
So you had some money to be comfortable for a while.
Yeah, so we were comfortable for about 2.5 years, and then we started to run out of money. So then we had to move into a city called Huntington Park, which is not to be confused with Huntington Beach.
Where were you before that? Before that.
We were living in Glendora.
Got it, okay. Yeah,
Glendora, and then we lived in Hollywood, but we'd have to move quite a bit because every time we'd get raided, we'd get kicked out, right? Because the owners would get pissed.
Sure.
Kick us out. And,
what was your
raids are, right? They'd upside down, tear up the house.
It's interesting.
Helicopters everywhere.
When I got arrested, when the FBI, they were incredibly respectful.
Yeah.
It was really weird, but they waited for me outside my house, and when I drove out, they're like, excuse me, do you know where this street is? I'm like, no, I thought I was getting robbed.
Yeah.
Because they were jumped out of the car, and then I'm like, so I had my daughter in the car, so I started driving away, stop, with the FBI.
Mm.
I'm like, what's up? They're like, you should probably go back in the house and drop your daughter off. So I was like, okay. So I turned around. They followed me in. They let me take my daughter upstairs, and they just very quietly arrested me. And it was pretty. I know they can be pretty. They can do the other way as well, right? So you experienced the other side of the equation.
Yes,
battering rams, helicopters, like armed guards, like right. Oh, yeah.
In fact, when I was six, I'm the one that opened that door, and as I'm opening it, they kicked the door open,
no.
And all of a sudden I see guns, boom, and then people coming from the back, and just guns everywhere.
All right, guys, BetterHelp.com. The people who have made psychological health affordable and accessible to everyone. I love this company. Let me tell you, anxiety, depression, anger management, phobias, just general malaise, like the stuff that you're not feeling right. You know what? The problem is that going to a traditional therapist is expensive. It's time cumbersome and you have to get in your car, drive. Well, this company allows you to get the help that you need. Okay, mindset, right, for your mind, right, either on a telephone, by text even, by Skype, I mean, you name it. They make it easy. It's incredibly affordable. They have thousands and thousands of the best licensed professionals available to you in every discipline. If you don't like the physician or the psychologist, right, you can change it up. Everything is confidential, and because you're in this podcast here, you get a special deal, right? With the discount code WOLF, you get 10% off your entire first month, okay? So again, I want you to go to betterhelp.com/wolf. You'll fill out the questionnaire. They'll sit you with the perfect person, the perfect psychologist to help you live a better, happier, more empowered life. Check it out now, betterhelp.com. All right. Time to hear about one of my most awesome sponsors of all, because it hits you right where it matters most, in the hardness of your dick, if you're a man. If you're a woman, well, you're benefiting anyway, but we're talking about BlueChew.com, and listen, shoes, you chew it, so you could have them on a full stomach. So just imagine like the old, I won't even mention the name of the old shit, right? But that's if you thought, well, okay, honey, I can't have sex right now because I can't get up because I just ate. How do you explain that to someone? Not with Blue Chew. With Blue Chew, you can eat, you chew, and screw. My friend Ron told me that. Chew and screw. You chew and screw. I love that. Chew and screw. Chew and screw with Blue Chew. Have your Blue Chew, chew and screw. And here's another example. You know, performance anxiety, sometimes great for teaching a girl a lesson in a positive way, but the show who's boss, in a positive way. I'm talking about all things, you know, good this year, holiday cheer. Let me give you an example here with Blue Chew, all right? So that really matters. If you worry about your mind wandering while you're having sex, you have a business issue going on, or you're thinking it'll get squat, right? Well, with Blue Chew, you could fucking be taking the SAT as a kid and with a heart on and be fucking as you're studying for the SAT. That's how great this stuff is, okay? It comes in the short-acting form for one night. It has the low weekend formula, gives you a couple of days of it. BlueChew.com, best part of all, they are so confident. They're so confident in how hard this is going to make you, which is a very important thing, we all know. It just is what it is, right? They can give you the first order for free. That's it. You pay a couple of dollars, like $5 shipping and handling. That's it. You go to BlueChew.com, your first order free because of the wolf, all right? They know my listenership is, you know, you horny bunch of bastards anyway. So check it out, BlueChew.com, promo code WOLF. And believe me, both you and your partner will be glad you did. You know what comes to mind? The whole Ellie and Gonzalez thing, that from like back when the kid from Cuba, and then I remember that visual stuck in my head of the kid, like this little kid with all the guns and the.
Yeah.
And the
I thought we were getting robbed for sure.
Wow.
And then, of course, so yeah, we run out of money. So then I end up, you know, we end up in Huntington Park, which again is polar opposite to Huntington Beach. People think it's Huntington Beach. It's like, no, it's Huntington Park, which is Southeast LA, kind of borders Watts, right?
Okay.
And at first it was okay. We found a 3-bedroom apartment. However, we started to run out of money again. So then we had to rent 2 of the bedrooms in the apartment. So now we had to live in this 1-bedroom, tiny little, you know, apartment, I mean, room that had basically no windows.
And how old were you now?
Now I'm about 13, 14.
Okay.
And as you can imagine, it wasn't the best living situation.
Yeah.
It was cramped.
Yeah.
It was dirty. I still remember roaches waking me up in the middle of the night, right? And the one thing I did get, though, was a lot of love. Mom gave me a lot of love, gave our siblings a lot of love.
Sure.
And the other thing that really helped out is she'd pray over me every morning, every night. So at a very young age, I began to believe that God was with me, that I was blessed. And that was huge for me because, you know, I think if you're ever going to take on some big dreams, you're going to take on some God-sized challenges, and self-sufficiency is no longer an option at that point. And I believe it's in, at that point that you better believe in a higher power to give you that little confidence that you need when you're going after these big goals, because when you're going after big goals, you're going to get a lot of resistance, a lot of darkness that you have to go through. So that helped, you know, tremendously. And I became obsessed with making $100,000 a year because I attributed that to getting my family out of the hellhole that we were in. And I just remember, like, literally thinking, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I'm going to make $100,000 a year minimum. Mm-hmm. And I guess that came about because the only successful person I knew back in those days was a car salesman, and he was making $100,000 a year. So I was just like, worst comes to worst, I'll go sell cars, but I'm gonna make $100,000.
It's really interesting because that number was the same number that I was chasing when I was in my late teens. And it was about, you know, about $2,000 a week or something, $100,000 a week. That was like sort of like that. If I had made that much money, I would everything have would arrived. Fine. You know what I'm saying? And then I found out about a friend of mine making $1 million a year on Wall Street, and I was like, get the fuck out of here. I'm like, no way. I didn't think it was even possible when I first started. So just a closed loop on your dad. So what was it? It was cocaine? Especially,
it was cocaine, yeah.
Cocaine trafficking and everything? Did he ultimately go for a really long time?
He did about 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Anyway, so you're the man of the house. You have this burning desire because your why is really to take care of your family, get them out of this hellhole, take care of you. I guess you're almost like with a father to your brothers in some way, right? You're the father, right? Man of the house.
Exactly.
So let's jump now to how did you accomplish that at a very young age?
Yeah, and you know, I always tell people, too many people worry about the what, the when, the where, the how, and they don't worry about the why.
Yeah, the why is everything.
And I think the why is the one that you cannot be wrong about. You could be wrong about everything else, but the why needs to be right, because I think the why is the light that'll guide your path. You know,
if you have a strong enough why, you'll find the how.
For sure. That literally was my story. But my why was so strong. So anyways, I went to, I tried getting a job at 15 years old. No one would hire me. And of course, the only people that took a chance on me was this call center. And I was lucky enough to get a job. And at the time, I thought this is the worst possible job I could have ever gotten because I was a very shy and timid kid. In fact, I'm still a little shy
now,
and timid.
Now, did you have an accent at the time or no? You'd already dropped it.
I think I had an accent because I was stuck in the ESL to the eighth grade.
Yeah.
Because my mom didn't speak any English. So I was stuck in ESL class. I had to go to the counselor saying, hey, I don't know why I'm still in ESL, but I think I should be getting out.
The reason I asked is I had a kid here, a friend of mine who's from Mexico.
Yeah.
He's to this day has, you have zero accent now, zero. I would never know that you were born outside the country, but he still has a bit of an accent. And his story was, he was actually born here, but didn't speak English, but he was 7 years old and never learned English. It was born in the, Yeah, really interesting. So you had did you have an accent on the phone when you were like 16 or
it didn't really matter because I was selling in Spanish.
Got it.
So I was selling long distance to Spanish customers, right?
Fine.
But now I'm so grateful to have a job and so fearful to lose it that I just went in there and I outworked everyone.
Right.
And then by the time I was 18 years old, I became the manager of about 40 people. I started to make $1,000 a week. And my self-worth just, you know, went through the roof, right?
Sure.
And, you know, I always tell people, in order to grow your self-worth, you have to put yourself in situations that demand more than you think you're worth. And when you succeed at those situations, your self-worth goes through the roof. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was 15 years old, and I had this dream of making $100,000 a year by the time I was 21.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew the only way that would happen was if I became the manager by the age of 18.
Right.
So I just went all in, knowing very well that the odds were stacked against me. And the truth of the matter is, I think most people at that point would have never attempted that because of the fear of failure.
Sure.
They would have let that fear paralyze them. And I was just, this is my only chance. And of course, once that happened, I began to believe that I deserved more because, you know, you can only receive what your mind can accept, right? Mm-hmm. And I didn't see any other 18-year-olds doing the type of stuff that I was doing, so I began to believe in my heart, like, holy crap, I am worth $100,000 a year. And then about 3 years later, I now became the right hand of the VP of sales.
Okay.
So now about 3 years later, he walks into my office and he says, Edwin, I'm going to resign and I'm going to start this alarm company and I want you to come with me and help me start it. He says, I can't guarantee you the $70,000 a year that you make here. This is back in 99, so it was decent money. But if you make this work, you can possibly double, triple, quadruple what you make here.
Right.
And the first thing I thought was, man, this guy's making 250 grand a year. He's resigning, so he must be pretty serious about this opportunity. The second thing I thought was, if he's willing to teach me how to start a company from the ground up, then this is exactly the opportunity I've been looking for as far as mentorship. And then the third thing, I was a big dreamer, man. I used to ditch fifth and sixth period, and I would literally drive to Rodeo Drive to window shop, and then I'd go look at all the houses in Hollywood Hills and Beverly Hills, and I'd say, man, one day I'm going to get here, right? And then, of course, I'd go back and get depressed going back to Huntington Park. But I knew that was my one shot to make it where
so
I wanted
to get.
So
you go for it, right?
So I go for it. I go all in. Everyone thinks I'm crazy because how are you going to leave a job that's paying you $70,000 with benefits and all that good stuff? But, you know, I think touching the dream was big for me because when I went to West Beverly Hills and Hollywood Hills, I started to see, man, people dress different here, man. People, some nice-looking women out here. I love the food out here. And touching the dream made me realize that there was a lot bigger things out there than just Huntington Park.
Right.
It made me realize that $70,000 a year wasn't crap, right? And it made me, you know, it got my subconscious mind to go to work on finding opportunities to make that dream happen. So when the opportunity came, I was like, boom, this is my chance. And I went all in. But I did make a mistake, though. I didn't fully commit. So I figured out a way to convince my seniors at the time to change my schedule so I can go in from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. And then I'd get off of work. And then I'd go from 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. The problem was that I had low stress, low performance is what I call it, right? I needed to put myself in a pressure situation, and I didn't, right?
Right. Well, I, you know, back in the day, I would say that, that exact scenario would be like, you know, if you're looking at the help wanted section while you're sitting in my boardroom and you kind of have this other possible exit ramp, you're already fucked. You got you have to put your back against the wall and give yourself basically no chance. Like the consequences of failure have to be so dire and unthinkable that you basically have no choice but to succeed. And as long as you're hedging your bets right, that I think that's like one of the biggest mistakes that I see a lot of the millennials make right now, and also the old, but it says that's the 20 to 30. They just like, they try to like, they keep one foot in success and one foot in safety. And I understand that strategy for someone who's 55 and 60 with lots of bills and lots of responsibility, where if you do make a misstep, there are bad, you know, really could be dire consequences. But when for your person in the 20s, 30s, you go fucking all, you have an opportunity. You got to go all in. And just make it like, if I fail, I'm screwed. Right?
And you know what's funny? So the first 10 days that I was in my business, I didn't sell one freaking alarm, right? But it's because I was still making $1,300 a week at the other place, right? So it wasn't until I fully resigned that all of a sudden what I couldn't memorize in 10 days, I memorized in one day. And then that following Monday, I had so much confidence that I just went in there and I sold five in one day. I made $1,500 in one day. I remember I couldn't sleep that night because I was like, damn, I just made in 1 week. I mean, in one day what I used to make in a week. Imagine if I could do this every day.
I know,
And I started dreaming like crazy. And, you know, I think that's just a good example of leveraging the most amount of pressure on you so you can produce at the highest level.
All right, so now let's just skip over the – so you became very successful as a salesperson, right? But I'm more interested in is – the time now when you decide to really go on your own and you really go for it, because now you're extremely successful. So let's just, because if we could go, we could talk for you and I could talk for 5 hours.
I want to go
to the point now. So, okay, so you become a top closer in that industry, right? There comes a time, obviously, where it was your turn to, I'm going to have my own place. Let's start right. How did that come about?
Yeah.
And what was that, you know, the moment we said, you know what, I'm going to go for it and let's start right there.
Yeah, so when I first started, it was my company, and I did grow it to a certain level, but it was more of a mom-and-pop shop.
How many people?
I had 20 sales guys that worked for me. I had six office employees, And I was just worried about making money at that time.
And how much were you making about that? Were you making $500,000 a year, $1 million a year?
First year I made $150,000. The second year I made $250,000. Okay, the third year I started making $500,000.
Right, and then, so you like and that, that, right? That sort of small mom and pop solid business, right? But not making tens of millions, right?
No, no, I was making at the most, I was making $800,000 or $900,000 a
and
year.
And what was the moment? Like, tell me about that shift when you said, you know what? I'm going to scale, I'm going to grow. Yeah. What happened?
So it's actually a conversation that I had with my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife. And
who, by the way, is
Teddy Mellencamp.
One of the, so John Cougar Mellencamp's daughter.
Yes.
Real Housewife of Beverly Hills.
Yes.
All right, guys, we're in the month of December here. So it's really that time to start taking a look at things that really matter. And one of them is your insurances, especially life insurance right now. Listen, you probably heard me talk about this company before. They're a great sponsor of mine, Policy Genius. They take the guesswork out of getting life insurance, all right? So once you sort of enter your information, what you need, what your outcomes, what your goals are, right, they will do all the work for you, find the best policies, and handle cutting through all the red tape and everything like that. And not only, by the way, does this company handle life insurance, but they also handle home insurance, auto insurance. So it's like a one-stop shop, all right? You got to check it out. Here's the deal. I want you to go to the website policygenius.com right now. It takes only a few minutes to find the exact right policy for you. Okay, you're not sure where to start. They'll help you. Just go to the site. Check it out. It's very intuitive. It's easy to follow. Let this company do what's most important. You don't want to, you know, I don't say this, but, you know, at the end of the day, do you really want to, like, you know, leave this, you know, shuffle off your mortal coil and not have the people you love protected? It's important. Check it out, policygenius.com. All right, time for our great sponsor, Vincero Watches. Listen, guys, I don't have my Vincero watch on today here, but I got to tell you, you know, I'm a big fan of their watches. I wear one of their watches. Why? Because it's awesome. All right, let me just tell you the deal with Vincero watches, all right? They have basically cracked the code for taking watches that, like, you know, you would think they cost $15,000, $20,000 a piece. Like, this is a huge blow, right? Very expensive. Let me just tell you something. A Vincero watch literally looks identical. It's the quality is identical. And frankly, all right, I mean, in some respects, you know, there's so many different styles to choose from. They make it so easy to buy online. What do you think it costs, all right? For an average Thai super high watch is 10, 15, 20 grand, you can get a Vincero watch for like $150 to $300. It's just ridiculous, all right? So it's like a win-win. Listen, all I'm asking for is this, all right? I want you to try one Vincero watch, all right? Just one, see how it feels on your wrist. When you get the right watch, it just feels good on your wrist. It makes you feel like a better man. It just does. Keeps perfect time, obviously, and so many styles to choose from. I want you to go to VinceroWatches.com. Just choose one watch, the one you like best. Start with one. I promise you, you'll be taking many more Vincero watches off this website. Let me give you the exact details. Like, it's 15% off. You get. I want you to enter the promo code WOLF. You're getting an extra 15% off on the Vincero watch. Enter promo code WOLF, all right? Vincero watches, they're awesome. I wish I had mine with me today, but I'm traveling and I left it home at the office, all right? And that's the story. You know, I have to admit, it's not that I'm not a fan of that show. I don't like those shows.
They can get addicting. So you're smart.
She loved these shows. Yeah. It was like this thing, the Real House. I'm like, oh my, here we go.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll leave
there's
it at
some,
that.
There's some fanatics with that show, man.
I don't get it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But I know a lot of people love it, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't mean to demean the show. It's really not my thing. I don't like watch any reality TV, really. I'm more of like I'm like science fiction crime job. But anyway, so she's your wife, right?
So she's my wife. And at the time, she was my girlfriend.
Right.
And I'd become stagnant.
Beautiful lady, bud.
Thank you. I'd become stagnant, right? So I wasn't growing. And what happens when you don't grow, you obviously start to get bored of what you're doing. So I kept trying to invest in things that I had no idea on. And I would continue to lose money on these things. Yeah. And then finally, my girlfriend's like,
invest in your fucking self.
she's like, why do you keep investing in shit you don't have any idea on? Why don't you invest in the one thing that you do know about, which is home security, right? Your own business. And the light bulb turned on because I invested in sales, guys, but I never invested back into the organization, right? And the reason why is because I wasn't sold on what I was doing. I didn't know if that's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life, right? And finally, I had to confront, do I want to do this for the next 20, 30 years.
And what year is this now?
This is 2009.
Okay.
So now I said, you know what? I am going to do this for the rest of my life. This is what I love to do, and I want to build a company that people can build a career with, mm-hmm. right? People that feel the same way can be attracted sure. to it. Because prior to that, all I saw was like hole-in-the-wall type of alarm companies. I didn't really see any big companies. And I was the biggest at the time for the dealership
locally.
That I worked for. Yeah, locally.
Right.
So I never saw anyone doing bigger things than me. So the law of the lid wasn't high enough for
sure.
me. So I finally invested in a CFO. And I paid 150 grand for him. And I remember saying, man, it's 150 grand. That could be a Ferrari, you know? And but I just said, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to invest in it. And then we went from 6 office employees to 50 over a one-year span. And then we started going from one state to, you know, 12 states at the time. And from there now, same thing, right? Now I'd fully committed. I always say when you fully commit to something is when you pay for it, right? Time and payment. And now I commit it with the investment. So now my urgency to go get sales guys just went through the roof,
sure.
right? And now I had to fill that place up and I was able to do it.
So let's talk about the sales side of this business, right? So, mm-hmm. Well, first explain the economics, right? As a business, so basically what you're doing is you're a dealer for Brinks or others as well?
For Brinks.
Just for
In
Brinks.
Our business, you could only be a dealer for one. So
got it.
I basically sell them the contracts. You know, I do the
so
installation.
So you do the sale, right? You do the installation,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, so I do the sales. So yeah, we have 700 sales guys. We got about 150 installers, and then we have about 89 employees. So it's a big operation.
So the typical contract for that's pretty is do they
36 month contract?
But it's pretty low monthly. It's like a monthly low monthly fee. Is there an installation charge? That's free.
That's free. So it's about $54 to $70
per month.
Per month. Yeah.
Okay.
Depending on what package you get.
Fair enough. And that gives you basically, you know, window alarms, door, the whole thing, monitoring, 24-hour fake call. My password is ass-tastic.
Exactly.
What movie is that from? Come on, yeah.
No, which one?
Couples Retreat, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think I've seen that one.
It's a fucking funny movie, right?
I think I could check it out.
All right. Anyway, it's because his alarm goes off, and like he's like his password's ass tight.
Yeah.
They're like, what?
Yeah.
Anyway, random thought. So, okay, so on economics, right? Mm-hmm. So what you do is you go out there, and then you finance, you get paid up front for the contract, right?
We get paid up front, yep. And then from there, I pay for the equipment, I pay for the installation, I pay the commission,
mm-hmm.
And then...
And you got a margin.
Margin there.
And you have a tail on that? You get paid each... Is it like one sale, you get paid, and you're done, or
yeah.
is there a trail for it?
There's a little rev share as well
okay.
on that stuff. So, again, it's a great business because it's one of the few businesses that pays you high commission that
uh-huh.
you're able to scale.
Sure.
Usually businesses that pay you high commission, you can't scale.
Right.
Or usually high commission paying jobs, you got to wait 6 months to a year to get
sure.
good at it.
Sure.
This you can learn within a week,
sure.
get paid within a week.
Yeah.
And it's such a difference maker because you can make such an impact in people's lives because you could literally, we just hired a guy that was literally homeless. And within his first week, he made $4,000.
Right.
You know, and you know what that's about because you did that over and over many times back
then. So now
in
I spoke, I was the keynote speaker at the door to door conference,
mm-hmm.
right? And a lot of those guys are out there. One of the biggest verticals out there is home alarm systems, right?
Yep.
So basically, are you doing straight cold calling door to door, or are you having any sort of marketing that's generating leads and having them go to them, closing them? Are you doing
It's mostly just door to door.
Door to door, straight on,
old
fashioned.
Good old fashioned, you know. But we've become pretty good at it. Now we have other channels, like we have an MDU, multi dwelling units, where we make smart apartments, right? We do some do-it-yourself stuff.
But the main thrust is that old, good old-fashioned, which just works and makes sense.
Which just works, man.
So tell me, okay, so what's your philosophy in terms of when you, for hiring, are you doing the old, we called it at Stratton, we called it the mirror test.
Yeah.
You know, you put a mirror under their nose, it fogs up, you're hired, right?
Yeah.
the reason was we weren't paying real draws to people.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was like, you know, and the system I was teaching, the straight line, was so effective that mm-hmm. as long as there was desire there,
yep.
and the reason I brought up accent before is that I found that, at least on the telephone, if there's an accent, that it makes it a little, especially with investments, right?
Right.
Now, if you're calling like, that doesn't enter into the equation. But for your industry, the training method that you use, right, would you say that basically any motivated person can learn it, or is there a higher threshold of salesperson with you know, what's the barrier really? You know,
100%. I think as long as somebody has the desire, and I think of me, right? Because I wasn't a sales guy. I was timid and as shy as you can
right.
be, right? But what I learned is once I was able to memorize something, internalize it, mm-hmm. and then personalize it, mm-hmm. my enthusiasm was able to come out. Okay. I've never been a rah-rah guy, but if I know what I'm talking about, it's that certainty, it's that confidence sure. that you can transfer to someone.
Right, which is so, what I teach basically, very, you know, it's exactly what I teach, right?
Yeah, so it's exactly, you know, hey, learn the script verbatim. Say that thing 1,000 times if you have to. Once you can internalize it, then you can personalize, add a couple words here and there, sure. so it's more your personality. Mm-hmm. But if you have your rebuttals and you have your presentation, you're going to have confidence. And at the end of the day, what sells is the confidence and certainty, right?
Right.
And when you don't have – and it's a, it, you have to make it replicatable. And that's why, like I said, I'm a big fan of yours because you were able to take something complicated, right. as complicated as it comes,
right.
simplify it, yeah. and then you know, you're able to take it to the masses and stuff. And
so let's go some car sales stuff. You're a sales guy. I'm a seller.
Your opinion. I haven't sold in like 10 years, but...
I can tell you got it.
You know what's funny is I've made a mind shift in our company now that we've become a leadership development company mm-hmm. that's disguised as a sales organization, mm-hmm. right? And the reason that is so is because in 2016, I had something that happened to me. And I'll talk about these four pillars that I love to talk about, right?
Sure.
It's the things that I want to improve on. It's the things that I want to focus on, right?
Okay.
And for me, that's faith, fitness, which is the body and mind, family, and then finances. Now, the reason I put fitness in front of family before everybody screams at me is because if you don't take care of yourself,
right.
it doesn't matter how much love you have for your children yeah. and wife, if you don't have energy because you're out of shape or sure. your mind's not right, you're not going to be able to love anyone, right? So I try to work on these four things. Now, what you got to understand about those four pillars is that there is no such thing as balance.
Right.
If you want to be great at something, it's going to take most of your time, which means the other areas of your life are going to be affected.
Sure.
So the key is to identify which area of your life is not spiking, and then just make a conscious effort to make incremental improvements in that right. area. So you don't allow that area to die off, because if you don't do something for a long time, you're going to start to dislike sure. it.
Yeah.
And the last thing you want to do is allow one of those pillars to come crumbling down, because
right.
it can set off all the other pillars to come crumbling down. Mm. And that's what happened to me in 2016. So for 20 years, I didn't pick up a book. I didn't listen to a podcast. Any of that. I didn't work on my mind. So I allowed that pillar to die off. And the reason I allowed that is because I didn't want to be reminded of what the school system made me believe, which was I wasn't very smart, because I was my self-worth, according to them, was tied to the ability to pass a test and the ability to get good grades. Well, I graduated with a 1.8 GPA, and I just wasn't very good at that
stuff.
Wow,
that was the GPA, yeah. This is your GPA yesterday. The Mexican, my friend, Mexican,
yeah.
he had a 1.8. He's the 1.8 GPA.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. It's like Hispanic the thing. Holy shit.
Well, that's, it was the exact same GPA. I'm not even making that up. It was 1.8.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what happens is when you're in 50-man classes, 40-people classes, and you're sitting in the back, you're not going to learn much, right? Yeah, and when you're stuck in ESL till the eighth grade. But anyway,
he was in ESL till. One thing, just to comment on one point you brought up about this thing about family and fitness and you know, sort of what comes first. I mean, I think a great metaphor for that is like when you're in an airplane and they give you that dreaded safety warning, like they always do. They say, you know, put your seatbelt on. Oh, I don't know, fucking seatbelt on. Yeah. Put it low and thought, yeah, okay, thanks for that. And then they say, you know, and if it for some reason, you know, the oxygen masks fall down, mm-hmm. put the mask on.
Yeah.
But what they say is this: they say, if you're traveling with a child, mm-hmm. put your mask on first.
Yep.
Before you put your child's on.
Yeah.
Because if you don't yourself have energy, power, or oxygen, so to speak, you can't help anybody.
Exactly.
So it's very similar to that. Like, you know, if you're not, it's not selfish. It's not like looking out for number one. It's simply that if you're not, whether it's healthy, whether you're not breathing, if you're not essentially fit, and then think it could be physically, emotionally, it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
Then you can't be any good to anyone else.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
And so for you, what you're saying is that you essentially didn't study, narrow sort of, you said, I'm good at this, I'm not going to broaden my horizons at all, because it had a negative anchor towards education, right. And, you know, I get it.
So for years, I was able to suppress that doubt, that big unlimiting belief, self-limiting belief, I should say, that I had by basically telling myself, as long as I outwork everybody, and I have more discipline than everyone, and I have perseverance, faith, and integrity, I'll eventually beat people out.
Right.
Well, for 17 years, that's what I did until I got to 2016 when, and that was when I finally surpassed what I thought I was worth. The company made, you know, over $40 million that year, and all these doubts started to surface. Like, you're not smart enough. People are going to find out you're, you know, I think they call it imposter syndrome, right? People are going to find out you're really not that clever. And I started to run away from being a leader.
I guess, you know, what you're saying is, like, to quote another movie line here, is like, there was, I think the movie was Broadcast News, maybe, or Network, and I think it was John Hurt, William Hurt, says to the other character, like, you know, what do you do when your real life surpasses all your fantasies, right? And the other girl says, you shut up and don't talk about it. But the point is, I guess you're at that point where, like, what do you do when you're what you really thought your goals, you're above that.
I'm above that.
What's your motivation now? What do you do next?
Exactly. Right? Yeah. Well, what started happening is, because I'd surpassed what I thought I was worth,
self-sabotage,
right? So I started going a downward spiral. The company started going on a downward spiral. And it wasn't until I took action towards my biggest fear in life, which was I wasn't
smart enough.
That I wasn't smart. That was my big fear.
Sure,
right?
Yeah, I get it.
So I finally picked up a book. It was the first book I picked up since Charlotte's Web.
What book was it?
10X by Grant Cardone.
Okay.
And it was so hard for me to retain it that I literally had to write the book out because I bought the audio version.
Right.
So I had to literally write everything out. And then when I finished reading it, I realized, holy crap, everything that's on this book is stuff that I already did.
Right.
So then I started studying. I made a commitment to study an hour a day, every day, like I do on my fitness of the body. Mm-hmm. And as I started studying guys like Ed Mylett, guys that were worth the hundreds of millions of dollars, I was like, wait a minute. All these guys are talking about the same thing I already did. Mm-hmm. So because I experienced it, I believed it in my heart. Now my self-worth went through the roof. And the way I break that down is, see, in 2015, consciously, I told the whole company, oh, we're going to be a $100 million company. The problem is my unconscious mind didn't believe it. Right. And as you know, your unconscious mind will block things because the unconscious mind is a lot more powerful than your conscious mind. Right. Mm-hmm. So it began blocking it. So it wasn't until I attacked that dream, that fear, that now I started to really believe that I was worth $100,000 a year. And then all of a sudden my unconscious mind starts to align with what I was saying consciously. And then 2017 happens, right? When I finally took, that's when I was doing all that studying, right? Then what happens is you start attracting everything to make that dream happen. All of a sudden we land Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. All of a sudden, Grant calls me to be on a show. Ed Mylett calls me to be on a show. All of a sudden, a C-level executive that was running a billion-dollar company, was already retired, living in Beverly Hills, calls me and says, man, I saw one of your videos. I love the smart home industry. It reminds me a lot of what the wireless cell phone industry was 20 years. I want to work with you. And now he's my president, and we've been on fire. Now we're on pace to hitting $100 million, bigger than ever. But it took me attacking that fear that, you know.
So going back to the books that you choose, right? Mm-hmm. I love Ed Mylett. He's a I'm a big fan of his stuff. Did you find any books where that it wasn't about just stating the obvious, like where you said, like, you read the book, you're like, oh my God, this is all, did you ever go, like, for instance, there are some books I've read to me changed my life, not because it confirmed what I already knew, but because it actually had me thinking in ways that I hadn't thought before.
Yeah.
Like Thinking Grow Rich. Have you heard Thinking Grow Rich?
I want to say I've heard of it,
of course. You should read this book.
But
first book I ever read.
Okay, was that it?
Think and Grow Rich.
Okay.
I read it in, I thought, like, wow, I don't want to date it, but it's like a long time. Like, I'm talking like 3 decades ago, even more. Probably 4, you know, I was in my teens when I read this book, and it literally changed my life.
Yeah.
It was a life-changing situation. And then it's true what you're saying, though, is that I find the problem with a lot of books is that you read them and you're like, okay, it's kind of just stating what I already know. Right. So it confirmed to you, I think what you got out of your first books was like, wow,
I'm
smarter than I...
Yeah, that's exactly it. I'm like, well, shit, I guess
I... Wait a second, right?
Yeah.
Have you had any books that you've read that you could recommend that you thought were like that really actually taught you strategies above that? Because there was two schools of thought. Let me give you an example. One is like, I read a book a day. Yeah. That's the one school thought, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And the other one is I never read anything. And it's, the reason I say is that in the last week I've had a both types on my podcast. One, and it was really funny. I was like, oh, well, so I never would ever read a book. I was like, oh, you wouldn't want to be a friend of the ex guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But so have you ever read books where you really actually learned, like instructional step-by-step stuff?
So it's funny you mention that because obviously I like to do my homework. The way I get my confidence is by preparing. And you're the Way of the Wolf book. I listened to it, so I'm going to have to go I'm going to have to actually read it again. But the stuff that you're talking about resonated because it's that's why I told you it's all about replicating it. And what you're talking about there are the details, right? The value is in the inefficiencies, right?
Exactly.
And telling people this little detail, this is why they're thinking it. This is, I mean, that's like changing. So I really loved it. In fact, I'm probably going to read that thing. Like, I'm the type that needs to read
it like
two,
reading.
Three times. But I have to work at it. To me, it doesn't come easy.
It's really interesting because listen, I bet you if we tested your IQ, you're a really smart guy. And it's so funny to watch a limiting belief at work here, right? Because you're actually really smart, but because when you were younger, somehow it got in you. That's not who I am.
Yeah.
And once we think that we're not something, we just don't attack things or try things that essentially run counter to our own beliefs. Let me give you another take on this. You made a statement before, which I agree with. You said about this whole thing about the fear of failure and stuff like that.
Paralyzing.
Let me
real quick. The Way of the Warrior by Irwin McManus, who's my pastor at Mosaic.
I was in Mosaic recently.
Oh, nice!
For the first
what'd you
time.
Think? Yeah, yeah.
I was shocked. I liked it, but I didn't expect it. It was music. The music.
It's a little different.
I couldn't believe it. I walked in there. I was like rock and rollish. I'm like, wow, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I actually did enjoy it. Yeah. It was someone just dragged me there at the last second. And as I walked in there, I was expecting some speeches. And it was like, it was pretty cool actually.
Irwin's really good.
Went over in
Hollywood.
Hollywood.
La Brea. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty
That's
cool.
That's right
actually.
By my house.
But what I was, try this one up a size, right? So like my belief is that it's true that people don't try things because of a fear of failure. Like, no one wants to fail. So I think there's some element of truth. But I think far more important when it comes to people not going out and really taking action is not so much that they think they're going to fail, is that when they run the movie out, they really don't believe they have what it takes to succeed.
Yeah.
They can't see themselves like, I don't really possess the sales skills or the marketing savvy or the connections or the capital. I just don't have access to the actual stuff I would need. So why do all the work, right?
But I think it's because they have a history of not keeping the promises that they make to themselves, right? And they think that doesn't matter, but your unconscious mind remembers everything.
Mm-hmm.
So when you constantly lie to yourself, you're just creating a bigger hole. And like, you and I are about, hey, let's put ourselves in pressure situations so we'll force an increase so we
correct
can, our urgency level and our necessity level goes up. We can handle those pressure situations because we have a bunch of wins under our belt where we always keep our word. When we say we're going to do something, we do it no matter what. There's no excuses, right?
I think for
and,
me,
but when
yeah,
people
yeah.
don't, when people have a history of never coming through, they make up excuses on why they can't do it, but it's because they have no confidence, right? They have no self-trust because they've never proven anything to themselves. And that's why I tell people, hey, whatever promise you make to someone, if you tell someone you're going to go to lunch with them, don't freaking lie to them and say you're sick. Like, you go to lunch, it could be a small thing or it could be a big thing. Like, when I
It's a habit. It's just a habit of getting into it, of being honest with yourself, being truthful in all your interactions. Yeah.
When I first started my job, I told my mom, in 90 days, this house is going to be yours. Man, I was working in Watts, California till 11 o'clock at night. And you know how many deals I got after 10:30? Easily over 100, and that brought my confidence through the roof. If I didn't have that why, I would have sat on the curve like everyone else did at 8 o'clock.
So let's talk about two things there. Number one, that strategy to me that you just laid out here, let's really dig into that. I think that's one of the most underutilized strategies for success, which is publicly stating to someone what you're going to do and giving, almost embarrassing yourself into success. For example, when I got out of jail, right, and I was writing my book, my first book, The Wolf of Wall Street, I was on page 20, and I really was concerned that how could I finish this book? It seemed like such a daunting task. I'd never written a book before. I wasn't a natural writer. So you know what I did? I went to my daughter, who was 12. I said, guess what? I said, Daddy's going to write a bestseller, and he's going to become a famous author. And she's like, oh, my God. And then she went and told my ex-wife, so I was fucked. Then that day, and she's like, oh, yeah, sure, you're going to become. Then I had
then you had to prove her.
But the point was is that by doing that, I was almost using my own worst fears of falling short in the eyes of my daughter to empower me to do things that would you know, it's not going to be the most comfortable thing, right? So stepping into uncomfortability but publicly declaring this is what I'm doing, not playing small, not playing safe, but putting it out there in the world and then having no choice. And by the way, you know what? I've done that a lot and not succeeded. I put it out there and fallen short. But that's okay. So the other side is I think that one thing about yourself is you're not scared about being wrong. In other words, as an entrepreneur, I've been wrong so much more than I'm right. It's very seldom that I hit it on the head. But when you do, you only get it. It's like one hit in the head, that's $50 million or more. Well, if you learn how to be wrong as an entrepreneur, you can try something that doesn't work, pivot, next. And in my own business, I am constantly trying to come up with the next thing. It doesn't work yet. Most people, next. All it takes is one success, right?
All it takes is one success. And I think too many people play it safe, right? And when you play it safe, you're essentially squeezing faith out of the picture, right? If you only do what you know you're good at, if you only go where you know and you only do the things that you know you will succeed at, then you remove any need of faith, right? And that's why I've always embraced uncertainty, right? Because I realized that uncertainty is what allows me to grow. Uncertainty is what allows me to, my need for God gets heightened, and it's usually there that he meets me and we accomplish great, great things. And that's always been my thing. I've realized the only way I will ever grow is if I put myself in these uncomfortable, you know, situations. Sure. And then the second thing I'd say to that, Jordan, is the deadline is huge. In fact, I got this formula that I've used to attain everything I've wanted in my life, and you probably know this formula already. 99% of the people actually know it. The problem is they misapply it. Most people are waiting to have to take action to then become whatever it is that they want to have, right?
Act as if,
right? So they want to save $80,000 to finally go to an open house, to finally become a homeowner. And the problem with that way of thinking, it's related to a bad relationship with money, and it's also related bad relationship with money and to a low self-worth. You see, if you're always worried about not saving enough money or not having enough money, you're going to start to hoard all of your money. And if you hoard all of your money, you're never going to be able to reward yourself, right? If you don't reward yourself, you're never going to be excited about anything. You won't touch the dream, right? And what happens is when you don't reward yourself and you don't know that good things exist, right, then you become complacent and you'll begin to coast through life hoping that one day you'll have enough money to finally take action and do what you want. And the only thing that happens is you're going to get punched in the face by life. And when it does, it's probably going to take most of your money, if not all of your money. And then you live this endless cycle of trying to save enough money to finally do what you want. And it's because you have a mindset of scarcity. Now, the mindset that you're supposed to have is a mindset of abundance. And all that is, it's upside down. First, you become, right? Then you take action. Then you have, which is the date. When are you going to have it by, right? Becoming is having faith, right? Faith is taking action before you have what you want, right? Faith is just positive mental attitude. And then the other part is you got to believe in yourself, right? You got to believe something in your heart before you actually have it. The only way you'll ever believe something in your heart is by experiencing it. The only way you'll ever experience it is by putting yourself in uncertainty. But when you conquer that uncertainty, then your self-worth goes through the roof, right? Then you start to take action before you have the money because you realize you're a money-making machine. The other thing that happens when you take action is it sends a signal to the universe, to God, whatever it is that you want to believe in, telling him you do have faith, and now you cause him to act on your end. And then the other part that happens when you take action is you get a blueprint on what you need to make that dream happen. All you have to do at that point is break it down to the ridiculous, right? The more actionable steps you could break it down to make it real, mm-hmm. the more realistic, the more attainable, the more excited you are to get off your ass. And then the only thing that is left is to put the deadline on it, and then you go after it like your life depends on it. Now, if this is your first time doing it, there's a 98% chance that right before you're going to get your blessing, you're going to get punched in the face again. And this is where you're going to be, and you're going to be dropped to the floor, and this is your test time. Are you going to go back to who you've always been, mm-hmm. or are you finally going to just continue to push forward, focusing on the things that you can control, all these other moving parts that you cannot control? Remember when I said when you act, you send a signal and you cause him mm-hmm. to act? He'll start putting the right people in front of you to make that dream happen, but it only happens if you continue to push forward with unwavering faith. And I tell you this from experience because I've done this dozens of times where last minute I just get it through when everything is seeming mm-hmm. impossible, but I had this unwavering faith. And I focused on, the key there is focus on the things that you can control. The stuff you can't control, that's where people get sidetracked, right?
Let's talk about the whole God thing.
Yeah.
You have a huge reliance, it would seem to me, on faith and God and religion, right? And I'd like to know what that really means to you. Is like, is it a metaphor to you? Is it, you hedged yourself once and said, is it, or universe, whatever you believe in. And I do that too, by the way.
Whoever they believe
in. But the point is, but you use it, it's very much a part of your... your fabric of who you are it seems to be an unwavering belief that there's a God. And, can you explain that?
So it was always in me. With my mom, she instilled those beliefs.
You said that. You said she was always instead of making you a blessed by God, right? But what does it mean? What does God mean to you?
To me, God is love, right? At the end of the day, that's what it's all about. It's not about judging anyone. It literally is about love, and it's about living inside, from the inside out.
Do you mean do you look like a God, like a guy in a chair? And
no, God is just, to me, it's I'm a believer in Christ,
okay.
Jesus Christ, right? But where I was saying, it's you got to live inside out. Before, I was living outside in, from the outside, right? I used to think that happiness came from external factors like women. Like, I loved women. That was my biggest, like...
Not me.
If I had a problem... Yeah, that was my problem, was women, right?
But women have been my problem since I'm four.
Yeah.
No, I'm serious. At the age of four, there was a girl who was, like, really cute in my nursery school. And, like,
same here. I think that's 4 years old.
Chasing me around. Yeah. And I was trying to show off, and I tried to run through these hedges, and there was a brick wall on the other side, and I got 16 stitches in my eye, and I got operas. It just started, and it's been downhill ever since, right?
Yeah.
And it's also been the best moments of my life.
Yeah, so
it's like it's the greatest thing ever, right? But so we're very much alike in that regard, right? But you found that you've essentially tamed that beast somewhat, at least.
Yeah, and I mean, women was the reason I wanted to be successful.
Why not?
Right?
Well,
I was like, man,
what other reason is there?
Yeah.
Is there another? I mean, I understand. Right. What? Why else would you want to even have a nice car or fight a war, do anything?
Right? Exactly, right? So I mean, that was my.
I'm glad you're honest about it, me. You know,
that was my number one.
Yeah.
I don't know if you'd call it a vice,
but not you. You're a liar. Liar.
But, I used to think for a long time these external factors brought me, happiness, right? Which women, cars, material stuff, homes, parties, events, and things like that, alcohol. And what I realized.
Did you get into drugs at all?
I did some drugs, yes.
I did a few.
Yeah, I did a few. I know you did.
I did a couple.
I did do my drugs. I went through a party phase, but I always had great, great discipline. Like, I always knew when to stop. Like, there was times where I party Friday through Sunday, but once Sunday came o'clock, it was 8 p.m., I was stopping because I knew I had to go to work, and if that money went away, the options weren't going to be around.
No, me too,
right?
For like 3 years. I did that. I was really good for like 3 years. It started like I would party just like, okay, it's Thursday night.
Yeah.
So I'm really rich now, so I could take off Friday. So I'm going to party like a rock star on Thursday night. Then I have Friday, Saturday, Sunday to recover. Monday, I'm a tiger.
Yeah.
Then I realized, wait a second, though. I'm really rich. So actually, if I go through Friday too, then I 2 days, I'm a young guy, certainly enough to recover. So I said, you know what? I could party both on Thursday night and Friday night and have the week. Then I said, well, in reality, though, the human body just needs 24 hours, so why not go at it Saturday night as well?
Yeah.
And then I realized, actually, if I only party up until noon on Sunday, then I can then equalize at the end. Then I said, well, actually, I'm really rich, so I can come in late to work on Monday. Before I fucking knew it, I was doing drugs 7 days a week, 24 hours.
Shit, yeah.
It's like a slow creep. That was me. You know what I'm saying?
Slow creep, yeah.
But I really swear to I am not kidding that I literally had started like saying, if I only party up until this moment in time, I'd be able to recover. And by the time I was done, I actually was still doing it. I said, if I wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and take 4 Quaaludes, and my wife doesn't get till, I can go up and down, have my first high in absolute peace.
Yeah.
And when she wakes up at 7:45, I'll be sober again and it will all work. And I did that for a long time. And then I said, well, if I know, especially if I do a hit a blow, then that will actually wake me up even more. I had the whole thing worked out.
Yeah. You know, one of the smartest things I ever did in my life, in 2004, I had an opportunity to get a house in Hollywood Hills with a beautiful view. I was, what, 26 at the time, on top of the world at the time, I thought. And something came to me and says, if you buy this house, you're either going to end up dead or you're going to lose all of your business. Because everyone wants to party in the Hollywood Hills after parties at your house, especially if you're a young guy. You know, back then, there wasn't any Googling. So we used to tell people we were soccer stars from Spain, right?
There you go.
And there was no way of verifying that, right? And I had all the money to prove it.
The like good old days.
You know, so... So I knew that
you looked like you could have been, but and it also kind of looked like you could have been a soccer star from Spain back then, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, but yeah,
played up. Just wore the fucking jersey and stuff. What would they know, right?
And long hair.
I get it.
You know, all that good stuff. But anyway, so that was obviously a problem for me. But what I realized is that those things like women and alcohol and all that stuff, they brought me pleasure, and there's nothing, but they didn't bring me happiness. Now, there's nothing wrong with pleasure. Enjoy it all you can. But just realize that pleasure goes away, right? It's that it's a sensation,
and it's external, it's extrinsic.
Yeah, it's a sensation that'll go away because it'll go away because it gets balanced out by the sensation of discomfort and pain that you're going to have to go through in life anyway. Yeah. So what I've learned over the years is that basically, what gives you happiness is cultivating gratitude every day, but it's also this law of repurpose, right? Which is take every negative and turn it into a positive, right? Every event in your life, all it has a meaning. You're the one that puts either a positive meaning to it or a negative meaning.
Yeah.
But if you could put a positive meaning to it, then it gives you an emotion.
Right.
Too many people try to control the emotion. You'll never be able to control the emotion.
Right.
You got
to
put
the right meaning through language.
The right meaning to it,
right? Let's real quick here. We're going to stop now on the video portion here. Love you all. Great podcast today. We're going to keep going now. We're going to do another 10 minutes or so on the audio side. So go to either Spotify or iTunes, wherever you watch or listen to audio. Now we get into the real down and dirty stuff here. Now,
cool. Let's do it.
But anyway, so let me go back to one question about the whole God thing. Because I think it's something that I struggle with myself.
Yeah.
I've had times in my life when I've felt like very much connected in that department. Other times where I felt far more scientific and like it was all about like, because I like everything that you say about God can almost be replaced with a different word and still make perfect sense in a scientific way. In other words, like, you know, when you look at, say, you know, when you go out and do things, God will deliver, you know, what you want. Well, you could also say, well, you know, in the real world of success, you know, you don't, you know, there's no mystical force that attracts things to you, but rather that when you actually have an intention, it makes you aware of opportunities around you. So if you're moving towards these opportunities, when you get close enough to them, then you attract them because you're actually moving towards the things that are important to you. So there's like this, it's almost like when you say the word God, some people I think might be, oh, it's too bad, but I don't think it matters really. I think it's like, it's the same thing. It's just, that's why I ask what you really means to you. You know,
so like for me, so faith is the projection of the most beautiful possible thing for the future versus fear, which is also an act of faith, which is the projection of the worst possible thing for the future.
Right.
So whether you like it or not, you're faith-based. So if you're going to be faith-based, you might as well look at life through love, gratitude, you know, abundance,
Right.
Versus fear, anger, hate, and scarcity. Right. But, you know, it's like,
although
for instance,
fear can be a very powerful motivator too, by the way. If you can use fear.
If you can use it, yeah.
If you for me, I've learned how to harness my fears to, if I really need to get myself to do something I don't really want to do, I will sometimes use the fear of things going the wrong way, but I don't use not disempowering fear.
Right. So, for instance, God holds me accountable too, right? He sees even though no one else has seen for me, right? So, for instance, this problem with women that I had, what fixed that problem? And trust me, it was a long, it didn't get fixed overnight. It's when I surrendered and I basically said, hey, you're more important.
You 12-stepped yourself, basically.
You're more important than that. Yeah, you know? It's that accountability is huge, right? Because when you have no one that you're accountable to, who's going to know, right? Especially if you can get, you know.
How much do you think on the women thing, how much do you think of the, if it was the pure pleasure of the flesh versus your own self-esteem being tied to a beautiful woman?
A lot of it was the self-esteem tied to a beautiful woman, but it was also...
I speak from experience, by the way. I'm saying that. I'm the first to admit also, right? So it's not... It's really complicated.
It was
equation.
That self... You know...
Yeah, right?
When... And here's why. So the school system made me believe my self-worth was shit, right? What finally got people to like me at a very young age was women, right? The fact that I could attract women.
Sure.
All of a sudden, the CEOs, the VPs wanted to hang out with me because I was bringing the women, right? So I was just like, that was my way of like...
There's all business in Hollywood that goes on with that shit, right?
Right? So, you know, that's what that was about for me, you know? But I think, you know, if you... The best principles are all in the Bible. Everything we... You know, all these books that we read about, the mastery of the mind and, you know, all that stuff's in the Bible, right? Mm-hmm. Just people don't take the time to actually look at it,
the
right?
Lessons,
so, like, for me, Proverbs 18:21, right? Power is in, you know, life or death is in the power of the tongue, right? If you declare that you're going to be this person, then that's who you're going to be all your life, right? I'm a loser, man. I'm never going to be able to get out of this hellhole that I'm in. Then you're never going to get out, right? So there's a lot of wisdom
in
the Bible.
No doubt about it.
But I get what you're saying, right? That's why it's just like, it's not our job to like be Bible beaters, right? Let people come, you know, in their own time, you know?
I don't think it really matters. I think my point I was making is that I think that a lot of times people get caught up in like whether it's God or no God. In terms of let's talk about, you know, achieving success and happiness. I think there are two paths to the same thing, all right? And I think that for those that can't use the metaphor of God, okay, it's okay. In other words, I mean, you say whether you arrive there in the end or not, that's an individual's choice. I believe in God. I'm saying I do believe in God. I find it, for me, difficult that, I try.
I think I know where you're going.
Fate, I don't want to believe. See, my fate is what I make, okay? Either I'll find a way or make a way.
You got to believe yourself.
I believe myself, right? And I believe, of course, that, you know, that there's a higher power than myself. What it is, I don't really know. Mm-hmm. But what I'll never do is, I think some people will use God to disempower themselves also. Because you could also use it to say, well, it's just like it's out of my hands. It's fate. It's like sort of, you know. So,
and that's what I'm saying. You know, faith is taking action before you have what you want. You can pray all you want. It ain't going to happen unless you take action.
Like Joel Osteen's a great example of the positive side of the equation.
Yeah,
of
exactly.
Using it for positive thinking, achievement, right?
So here's one thing that, you know, I heard the other day, which made a lot of sense, right? Which is, why is it that, if there is a God, right, why is it that there's so many successful people that don't believe in God, right? And I thought the way that our pastor answered that was pretty eloquent in that he said, God created us to be so great that we really don't need him for success, right? But you will need him because when you get that success, if you don't have him, it will eventually crush you. You know, but I actually have a formula which I forgot to tell you about, which I think you'll love, which I call it my life is a game formula.
Okay.
And see, I look at life as a game, and you have to play to win it. Okay. The game of life consists of three things, and you have to have a balance of these three things. Number one is purposes. Number two is problems, and number three is restricted freedom. Now, notice you have to have a balance of all three. Purposes are your dreams, your goals. That's what gives you happiness. problems, believe it or not, also give you happiness. You see, the only way you'll improve in life is to have some resistance, mm-hmm. right? So
you have big muscles in the gym. So, fighting against resistance.
So like yin and yang, purposes and problems are inseparable, right? Mm-hmm. And so next time you have problems, basically embrace them because they're a way to grow, right? But here's the thing. Imagine, let's just say hypothetically, you didn't have any problems. Then you would get bored of the game of life. Let's use the game of basketball, for example. If I play you one-on-one basketball and I keep beating you 15-0, I might have fun for the first five games, but then I'm going to get bored of that game. I'm going to say, Jordan, I don't want to play you anymore. See, in life, we want to be challenged, mm-hmm. right? If you're not improving or you're stagnant, it's probably because you haven't challenged yourself. Mm-hmm. You see, if you're always comfortable, if you're always complacent, you'll never discover the greatness that's in with it, mm-hmm. that's inside you, right? Now, the third part is what we call restricted freedom. Here's a good one. Restricted freedom is where we get to celebrate our accomplishment and be present so that we can be fulfilled. Now, similar to purposes and problems, restricted freedom also gives us happiness, right? Now, because the last thing you want to do is have total freedom. Everybody's been sold we want to have total freedom, and that's an absolute fallacy. Because if you had total freedom, you wouldn't have purposes, which means you wouldn't have problems, which means you can't solve anything, mm-hmm. and which means you wouldn't be able to create anything. And we were put on earth to create, and whenever we don't create, we go stir crazy, we start to develop anxiety, and then we get depressed, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why you see people with all the money in the world, yet they are miserable. They become miserable because they stopped creating, mm-hmm. yet they stopped playing the game of life, right? And in life, you're either growing or you're dying. So just to recap, life is filled with purposes. Mm-hmm. You gotta, you know, that those purposes, the bigger the purpose, the bigger the problem. Your job is to solve it. Now, be present in the accomplishment. Where I failed, and I don't know if this happened to you, is I would accomplish something and then I wouldn't be in the moment. I literally was already trying to accomplish something else.
It's goal-oriented thinking versus vision-oriented. That's why. The words I use for it is that mm-hmm. if you're a goal-oriented person and putting all your emotional investment in the achievement of goals, then you're basically miserable until that moment you achieve the goal. And you're like, great, for a second. Then you're like, all right, what's the next goal?
Yeah.
And you're just going from goal versus having more of a longer-term vision. So I have a vision for my future. I am emotionally attached to that. Yeah. The goals I set, I usually don't hit my goals. I set really lofty goals. I stretch myself. I want to fall just short of my goals. Sometimes mm-hmm. hit them too. Yeah. Not outrageous goals, but I set my goals. And for me, it's more about, am I heading in the right direction or the wrong direction? They serve as barometers or sort of signposts on the way to my vision for the future. So I have a 3 to 5 year vision, right? And then I have these little steps along the way that are my goals. And if I'm achieving or getting close to them, okay, I'm doing well. If I'm not, I say, all right, fair enough, I gotta pivot and do something else. But it's typically my vision remains constant, although mm-hmm. I'm always constantly scouring the environment for other opportunities to integrate into my vision.
Yeah.
So my vision's never stagnant. It's always evolving, a living, breathing organism, so to speak, that grows, changes, and evolves. And I find by doing that, I can put up with the more the ups and downs and not say, because if all your emotional investment is the achievement of like, I need to get to this spot by this date, that's a really tough way to have happiness in your life, especially mm-hmm. if you're setting lofty goals.
Yeah.
So I just found that it's better if I look at them as simply, they're empirical, they're spots. Am I heading in the right direction or wrong direction? If it's mm-hmm. the wrong direction, let's pivot. I've become an expert at failing. Yeah. Seriously, because it's like, you know, cops and robbers. You know, they say the difference between a cop and a robber, the good guys and the bad guys, is the cops can be wrong 1,000 times. They only have to be right once and they capture the crook. Yeah. The crook can never be wrong. He's wrong once, he's in jail for 20 years. You get it? When I go about success, I look at myself as the good guy and the cop. I can take a shot, be wrong, learn from it, mm-hmm. pivot, try again, be wrong. All I need is to be right once, and I will scale that motherfucker to the stars. You
exactly.
get once you show me a model that actually has a runway, I can scale better than anyone I know. So I've spent my whole career, like, you know, taking shots, trying this, trying that, and then I've had about four massive successes in my life, and it was always after like 50 times of not quite getting what I wanted. And I don't, not that I don't make money, what I call failure is relative failure. Meaning, yeah, I've had a lot, even in my own business here, I've had a lot of like great things, right? Yeah, I made a few million here, but it wasn't that one boom. Then all of a sudden, you see that one thing and
then it explodes, yeah.
And that's it. That's your way. I think what you did with your business, where you go from like this sort of 50 or 60 people, and all of a sudden you're like, how many people you have now? You said five, was it?
700.
700 people.
Yeah.
That's a big company, mm-hmm. heading to 100 million in revenue.
Heading to 100 million, yeah.
Right?
And then, the best part is that I feel like we're just getting started.
And who knows what happens after that. And you're also an awesome fucking dude.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Honestly, you're fucking smart.
Thank you. Thank
so whatever you might have thought your whole life, I know smart when I see it, and you are smart, and you're a good guy, and I'm really happy for you. You're very successful, and the world's got a lot to learn from you. You have a hell of a lot to offer. So, guys,
thank you.
What a great episode of The Wolf's Den. Next time we'll get your wife on here, too.
Yeah.
Right? I think she was was she pregnant or something?
She's 7 months pregnant, yeah. So she's actually filming today.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. All right, guys. Another great episode. Take care. Love you all. Remember, subscribe. Subscribe. Tell your friends. Have them tell their friends. Have them tell their aunts and uncles and brothers and sisters and everyone else. Take care.
Awesome.
God bless.
All right. God bless. There you go.